Okay, so I'm walking down the street looking. There are some here. Yeah, there they are. There's two. Oh, no, there's three. Four. Wow. Okay, it's like you look and then one just jumps out at you.
If you go outside, you can't miss them.
There's four white ones. Looks like a family.
They've exploded in numbers since the 1980s. Some estimates number them at a billion across the world.
And there's another one. That one's red. There's a green one. Wow. This is like the spot.
They live on lawns, sometimes at cafes.
They're all over the place here.
They're commonly white and shiny.
They are just outside, totally vulnerable. Anyone could sit on them at any second.
The plastic chair.
So I have walked not even a block, and I have easily seen 20 plastic chairs.
This is Every Little Thing from Gimlet Media. I'm Flora Lichtman. Here's a contradiction about the plastic chair. It's taken over the world. It is everywhere. It's a piece of furniture that has gone viral. And yet, there's no patient zero, or that's what we thought, because everyone we talked to seemed to have no idea where it came from.
We don't know, is the short answer. There's no patent.
This is Witold Rubczynski. He's an architect and he wrote a book on chairs. And yeah, he said, it's weird that we don't know where they came from.
It is a little bit because it's such a universal device.
And we're not talking about ancient history. This chair arrived 40 years ago or so. For comparison, we know the origin story of other chairs that date back 5,000 years.
The Egyptians invented the folding stool. You know, when you go camping, it's a sort of X frame. We know so much about the Egyptians because the chairs survived in the tombs.
We know when padded chairs were born. It was in Western Europe in the 15th century.
One of the great moments in chair history is the invention of upholstery.
We know that the rocking chair was invented in the U.S. around 1750. We know that the beanbag was invented by three Italian designers in the 1960s. We know exactly who invented the metal patio chair and the deck chair. And yet, for the plastic chair, the injection-molded, factory-produced plastic chair, sometimes called the monoblock, chair experts seem to only have the vaguest sense of its origin.
It's most likely somewhere in Europe, because some of the earliest chairs are French and Belgian and German, but it's not at all clear. We can't attach a name to it.
How could this thing that is now everywhere have started nowhere? This paradox was like a magnet for ELT producer Christine Driscoll. So you have been on a quest to try to find the origin story for the plastic chair. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I have been.
For how long, would you say?
For about 2 months.
Christine read articles, called experts, surveyed all the chair people she could find. Someone has to know.
That's what I said. But everyone said no. It's not possible to know because it's not patented and we don't care because it's lowly and not a famous designer.
Where are you so far with this quest?
Okay, so I've exhausted all possibilities. I'm at my wit's end is where I am.
You're kidding.
Yeah, welcome.
I live there, Christine. But okay. Yeah, hi. You are welcome to here.
Thank you. That's so gracious. Have a seat. Have a seat on this monoblock chair.
And then one day, a few weeks ago, Christine found this person.
I've been introduced as Mr. Monoblock.
Is there anyone in the world who knows as much as you about this, do you think?
Certainly not.
Mr. Monoblock's birth name is Jens Thiel. Jens isn't a chair designer. He's not a professor of furniture studies. He's an entrepreneur and regular person who was really sucked in by this mystery?
I think I felt personally challenged by the fact that this chair was everywhere in the world, and at the same time, nobody knew anything about it.
That gaping hole in plastic chair history, it ate away at Jens. Jens knew that there were artsy, high-design monoblock chairs made in the 1960s. But for the common lawn chair, Jens couldn't find the source. He spent years researching the chair, trying to get to the bottom of this missing link in chair evolution.
You're traveling the world to try to find the person who invented the chair. Why? Why? Why did you care?
I really did. I mean, I went on this quest. I know it sounds crazy, but I just did that.
So he talks to one person after the next, and they all tell him the same thing. They say, no, it wasn't me. I didn't invent it. And then Jens gets a tip. He gets a note, and the note says,
I should get in touch with a guy called Henri Massonet, also a Frenchman, who I've never ever heard before. He was not a known name in the design trade. I wrote another email, and I got another very kind reply, and this time it was, oh, thank you very much. Yes, it was us. It was me.
So Jens, of course, has to go to France to meet this mysterious Henri Massonet, who was by this time in his 80s and retired. And Jens learned that Henri had founded an injection molding company.
He wanted to make things no one else was able to make before.
So Jens arrives at Henri's house, and Henri wants to show him something.
He got up in the attic of his very large, very nice house. He had a little museum with all the products he made over the course of 30 years.
And there, in that attic, Jens hits pay dirt. It's the ancestral eve of plastic chairs.
And they looked so good.
Henri told Jens that he made his first plastic chair in 1973. It's not clear why he hasn't gotten credit for this quantum leap in chairs. But seriously, making a mass-produced jointless chair, a chair that's just one single piece of plastic, that actually was a huge technological development. That is like a big breakthrough in chair history. Here's Vitold again.
Getting rid of the joints is a huge thing. The fact that there is no joints in the chair is something that chair makers have been trying to do, you know, for hundreds of years.
And Henri was super proud of it. He thought, this is lightweight, stackable, washable, comfortable, indestructible. He thought, this is something really special.
So he thought, it's a very good chair and I can demand a very good price for that chair.
Henri saw it as a high-class, luxury chair.
No one really bought these chairs for the first couple of years. They were too expensive, and 1973 was the oil crisis. Plastic was not the future anymore. And out came Massonet with a plastic chair.
Then in the 1980s, about a decade later, the tide turned for Henri's plastic chair. Just not in the way that he had hoped.
I think people just realized that this chair is very practical.
Other companies started making it, prices went down.
It became so popular that making monoblock chairs was just like printing money, basically.
The chair spread all over the world.
I mean, you couldn't walk down any street without seeing monoblock plastic chairs. They were everywhere.
I mean, it seems like these chairs probably have touched more butts than any other chair in history. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
But its success didn't seem to delight him. He wanted these chairs to be art objects, and they couldn't have been more common.
I guess, yeah, he resented it a bit. Yes. He was at peace with the monoblock, but I think he would have lived very well without the monoblock chair's world domination.
he accidentally invented what's maybe the most popular piece of furniture ever and hated it.
The monoblock chair is certainly the most successful furniture of human creation. And very interestingly, it is also the most unloved.
After the break, we get to the bottom of just how unloved they are and try to learn to love them.
When the first plastic chairs came out, I was stunned. I said, my goodness, they're beautiful.
When Henri Massenet stood looking at his creation, probably a lot of thoughts crossed his mind. One that probably didn't was that cities across the world would hate his chair so much that they would ban it from their streets.
Daniel Hofer.
Daniel Hofer works for the construction and traffic department for the city of Basel, Switzerland. 11 years ago, the city issued an ordinance that said that restaurants and cafes could not use plastic chairs outside.
We think of ourselves as a city of art and culture. The image that the city gives to a visitor is really important to us. So the government said, well, we really want to have only nice furniture here on our streets.
It's not just Basel. Cities around the world, Mountain View, California, Bratislava, Slovakia, Freiburg, Germany, have also rejected the plastic chair. Basel just lifted its ban a few months ago, but Daniel says that the chairs haven't come back. People seem to dislike plastic chairs for a lot of reasons. For environmental reasons, comfort reasons, general plastic reasons.
Plastic is a very unpleasant material to sit on.
That's Vitold. He's the guy who wrote the book on chairs, and I also think he could be described as part of the chair-erati. In his view, another problem with these chairs is that plastic manufacturers design them, not furniture designers.
They don't set up business to make chairs. They're making all sorts of things out of plastic. That's why the design is so awkward, I think.
Daniel from Basel said that he thinks the distaste may run even deeper. It's personal.
People want to distance themselves from it because they want to be better. They want to have something better than the cheapest thing. And if you can say, oh, the cheapest chair in the world is not good for me, you can say something about yourself.
We asked Daniel, could he think of a piece of furniture as hated as the plastic chair?
I can't think of one at the moment. I mean, there are other like chairs like that are used as torture instruments, which I would suppose there were that they are less liked, but they are not as common.
Can we just take a moment? Daniel is saying that the only piece of furniture he can think of that is more reviled than the plastic chair is one that tortures you. So it's clear that they're hated by some. But is there a way to love them? Could it be that the plastic chair is misunderstood? And if so, how can we see it differently? Christine Driscoll and I went to the only place that could provide an answer to this question. Pittsburgh.
How's Pittsburgh?
It's great. We're at a diner. Just had a, you know, waitress who hated us. It was perfect.
Great. know what she hated about you, or
it was that you ordered grilled cheese,
which I feel like is a classic diner thing. But no.
Hmm. Well, off to a good start.
We went to Adams Manufacturing, which is the largest U.S. manufacturer of plastic chairs, and we were there to meet the founder, Bill Adams.
Bill is very eclectic.
Is he as eclectic as all of the things in this room?
He is as eclectic as all the things in this room.
The boardroom that we walk into is filled with stuff. There's a miniature working locomotive. There's taxidermy, books, and then Bill walks in.
Flora, nice to meet you.
And it's immediately clear that Bill Adams sees the plastic chair differently than most people.
6,000 years of human history has all come together in resin chairs. That chair over in the corner is an exact replica of a chair they found in King Tut's tomb. It's all carved wood, and it was hand-colored, hand-painted, hand-decorated, and it's not that different from our Big Easy chair, except it doesn't have curves. Ours does.
They didn't have plastic.
They didn't have plastic.
Have you been a chair geek forever, or is this a recent obsession?
I remember the first time I saw, when the first plastic chairs came out, I saw them at the hardware show, and I was stunned. I said, my goodness, they're beautiful. They really are. They're just absolutely elegant. So,
wait, is that really your reaction? You saw these plastic chairs and you were like...
Yes, I was just stunned. I said, my goodness, this is the biggest change. This is like... It was like I'm playing a cell phone with the old central operator in the small town. That thought never left my mind. And then 15 years ago, we started to really get into it.
We talked to this chair historian who kind of disparaged plastic. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, plastic, you know... Like, it's never going to be as nice as other materials. Do you agree?
No! What a horrible thing to even think, let alone say.
When you look at plastic chairs through Bill's eyes, they really are beautiful and sophisticated. He's not seeing a cheap piece of plastic. He's seeing all of these things that are invisible to most of us. What are things that people could look at when they're, like, investigating their chair at home? What should they be looking at?
This curve right here in the front of the chair cannot be too sharp.
That's where your legs go.
You also want to see a dip in this area.
Like a butt indent.
Like a butt indent. What a perfect phrase, yes.
The technical term for this is an iliac bone indentation, and Adams Manufacturing has a patent on it.
Even King Tut didn't have that in his chair. I mean, for 4,000 years of chair manufacturing, no one but us said, wait a minute, people have iliac bones in their rear end.
Every detail on Bill's chairs, down to the faux wood grain pattern, is tested and workshopped. Adams Manufacturing even does focus groups for their chairs. And once they arrive at a final design, they commission a mold.
These molds are like a Rolex watch that's bigger than your refrigerator.
It's like a Rolex in that it's intricate and very expensive. A mold can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. An injection molding machine squeezes liquid plastic into this mold. And then in less than a minute, an individual chair is born. They come out one single chair at a time.
Wow, this is fun. So right now the plastic is going into the mold. Basically, it's like this thing is closed and then it's slowly opening right now and opening. It's open. Here comes the chair. It's being pushed out. So here is they're coming out. This is it. Is this the chair? Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Wow. Oh my God. It just falls. Like it just tumbles. Here it comes. Wow.
Christine, you had an analogy for how chairs are made. I wanted you to run it by everyone.
Okay, so it kind of reminded me of, like, if you ever watch, like, National Geographic, how, like, a baby horse is born. Like, it just, like, mm-hmm. comes out.
What a perfect analogy.
Oh,
yes,
thank you.
That's exactly right.
It's, like, ready to go, and it's just the one. And mm-hmm. And there's so many chairs that I was like, they're made one by one? Like, that shocked me. And it felt like, oh, this is really, like, just for me, this chair.
I never thought of that before, but that's really good.
Okay,
that's
good.
A very good way to look at it. Okay. It's born. Mm-hmm. The chair is born. A chair is born. We should have that as a motto somehow.
We're a chair adoption agency, I guess.
Yes, the chair is born here and you adopt it and take it home. That's very good.
If you look under the seat of most plastic chairs, you'll find this stamp. And it's like the chair's birth certificate. It's a grid, and you'll see an X that shows you the year and sometimes the month of your chair's birth. You'll also see your chair's belly button, which is where the plastic entered the mold. And almost all of the plastic chair fans we talked to for this story were in the habit of turning over chairs at weddings and cafes to look for this stamp. I don't want to tell you how to live, but turning over plastic chairs and looking to see what you can find seems to me like a good way. Speaking of that, we're off for the summer, but we'll be working on new stories. And if you have suggestions for proverbial plastic chairs we should be looking under, please send them our way. We're at elt@gimletmedia.com.
We also want to thank Brian Ropar. His YouTube channel, Brian Ropar's Plastic Chair World, got me into this story. And it is a wonderful resource if you ever want to learn more about all of the different plastic chairs that are out there in the world.
Stay subscribed. We'll be dropping dispatches over the summer. And also, we're hiring. Come work with us. You can find out more on Gimlet's website. And if you feel like it, write us a review on Apple Podcasts or send us feedback. We'd love to know what you thought of these first shows, particularly if you liked them. Every Little Thing is produced by Flora Lichtman,
Christine Driscoll,
and Ngofen Mputubwele.
Our senior producer is Catherine Wells.
Our editors are Devin Taylor
and Alex Bloomberg.
Scoring by Martin Crane.
Dara Hirsch mixed this episode and also wrote this song.
Special thanks to Nicole Pasolka.